Brendan should have been jealous. It would even be justified given the way Ryan was hanging onto Spencer's arm. Were it anyone else, he might have given in to the possessive streak in him, pulled Ryan up against his side, and kept him there with whispered words or brute strength. Only the fact that it was Spencer, without whom Ryan had been completely miserable, kept him from overreacting. "What am I supposed to tell them?" Spencer asked, as he got out of Brendan's car. He didn't rush up to the house like Brendan had thought he would. Instead, he just stayed on the curb, rocking back and forth. "Tell them you won your freedom in a poker game," Brendan suggested. He ducked his head to hide his smile at Ryan's deadly glare. "It doesn't matter what you tell them," Brendan said seriously after a moment. "There could be rock pygmies involved, and they'll still buy it. That's why I'm here, Spencer." "John said you'd make it so my parents don't ask questions," Spencer said. Beside him, Ryan nodded quietly, threading his fingers through Spencer's. "Is it going to hurt them?" he asked, looking over at Ryan. Brendan stayed silent since the question wasn't directed at him. "I don't know," Ryan said. "He's never used it on me." Spencer looked at Brendan in surprise. The vampire rolled his eyes. "Don't think that I'm some selfless creature who believes in the sanctity of true love or anything like that," Brendan warned. "It doesn't work on him. End of story." He pointedly ignored Ryan's irritated look. Perhaps it wasn't right to word it precisely the way he had, and yes, he did enjoy Ryan and most of the trouble he caused, but there was no sense in completely sugarcoating the reality of what he was. He wasn't above a little trickery if it got him what he wanted. "But to answer your question, Spencer, no, it won't hurt them," Brendan replied. "Come on," Spencer said, taking a deep breath and stepping away from the curb. "Let's get this over with." He squared his shoulders and quickened his pace, all but dragging Ryan behind him. They let themselves into the house and made their way up the stairs, to the master bedroom where Mr. and Mrs. Smith were sleeping. "You have your story?" Ryan asked. "Not the truth," Brendan warned. "Yeah," Spencer replied, his voice barely above a whisper, as though he were afraid of waking his parents. "Yeah, I've got something." "Good, let's go." Brendan opened the bedroom door and ushered the boys inside. Spencer made his way to the side of the bed, and Brendan followed, setting Ryan off to the side so he had a clear view of the humans the moment they woke. "Go on, Spence," Ryan urged, when Spencer just stood there silently. "Mom? Dad?" Spencer asked tentatively. "Louder," Brendan instructed. "Mom, Dad." Spencer's voice rang out in the quiet bedroom, and both of his parents woke at the same time. Mrs. Smith's eyes flew open, and she rolled over onto her side, before pushing herself into a sitting position. Mr. Smith just bolted upright, looking around in groggy confusion. "Spencer!" his mother exclaimed, all but crawling over her husband to grab her son. Spencer's father sat there, frozen for a moment more, before wrapping his arms around the boy and pulling him close. "Where have you been?" he demanded. "You will believe every word he says," were the instructions Brendan sent. "There is nothing suspicious or odd about whatever story he is about to tell you. Everything will go back to the way it was. You will not worry about this again." "There are these guys," Spencer said, his voice a little shaky and mostly muffled by his mother's shoulder. "But I'm back now." Once Brendan was certain that his suggestions had taken hold, he led Ryan out of the room and closed the door behind them. "Give them some time," he said. "Thank you," Ryan said. He reached out, the palm of one hand sliding down Brendan's side, while the other gripped the vampire's forearm. "You didn't have to do that." "No, I didn't," he agreed. "But I wanted to."
"Would you really?" Ryan began. "What you told Spencer?"
It wasn't difficult for Brendan to follow the fractured thought back to their conversation outside. Would he really use his gift to keep Ryan with him?
"Absolutely," he replied. "I'm a vampire,"
he reminded Ryan, tipping the boy's face back up when he tried to hide his expression.
"I'd do whatever it took."
He dropped a sweet, closed-mouthed kiss on Ryan's lips. "That doesn't mean I'm not happy with the way it turned out." Ryan nodded quietly.
"It's late," Brendan said. "They're going to be a while. You should try to sleep."
"Yeah," Ryan said. And though he'd agreed, Brendan didn't actually think he'd do it.
"I'll see you tomorrow night," Brendan said.
He stepped around the boy, running his hand across the small of his back, smiling a little to feel him shiver. Staying at the apartment with nothing but the cat for company just wasn't an option. John finished getting ready, buttoning his shirt again, putting his tie back on, and returning to his private rooms for the jacket he left in the closet. He studied himself in the mirror, smoothing his hands down the front of his clothes, and allowed his expression to go blank. There was no hiding what he'd done, but that was the whole point of Brendan's suggestion, wasn't it? Flaunt Spencer like Beckett had, only this time have him declared officially off-limits. Beckett wouldn't be happy for his game to have ended, but it probably wouldn't come as a shock. How could it with all the taunting he'd done? The only thing that mattered was that Spencer had been given a reprieve, no matter how temporary it was. Brendan was right. They'd just have to deal with the rest when they came to it. John reached for a hat and pulled it down low over his eyes before heading for the door. He could still feel the pull of healing skin and the drag of his clothing over the thick scabs on his side. But he put it out of his mind. It was still kind of sore, but the pain was little more than a throbbing ache and nothing he couldn't deal with. Even if he ran into trouble on his way to the Dandy House, or at the Dandy House, there was a first time for everything, he'd be all right. Even reopening the wound at this point wouldn't be much of a problem now that the worst of it had healed. After a quick stop at the guard's desk in the lobby, meant to ensure that Brendan had returned the key he stole, John headed outside. It was no longer raining, so he took his time as he wandered the streets, finding a drunk teenager to feed on in a dark alley behind a dive bar. The boy didn't put up much of a fight, which made the whole experience rather boring. John shook his head as he dropped the body to the ground. It was a sad day indeed, when he couldn't even find something to interest him in the hunt. There was no point in delaying the inevitable, John knew. He'd have to return to the Dandy House eventually, and the longer he put it off, the more time he'd have to think about Spencer, the weight of him in John's lap, the feel of his mouth as he licked and sucked at the cut of John's throat. He'd make an incredible vampire, John knew. His sharp mind, the intensity with which he felt, his strong sense of loyalty, they would all do him exceptionally well as a dandy. No good could come of thinking of those things at the moment, so John set them aside and focused his attention on his surroundings, taking care to watch the shadows,
to keep an eye out for hunters. It wouldn't do to be caught unawares. His trip across town was uneventful, for which John was grateful. The last thing he wanted to deal with was the two hunters he'd met with earlier in the evening, or anyone with an eye toward avenging their injuries. Things would be tense enough in the Dandy House without adding the possibility of John injuring Beckett's fledgling. There was still the connection there, despite Pete's protestations and his every attempt to shrug it off. No matter what else Beckett was, no matter what he did, he was still sentimental. He might not have been prepared for the trouble an immortal Pete Wentz would cause, but he had enough fond memories, real or imagined, that he refused to let go of. The butcher was standing on the front step of the safe house as John made his way up the path. He had one hand on Siska's shoulder as he explained something in a quiet tone, the younger vampire listening with rapt attention. Siska had such a serious look on his face that John smothered a smile as he approached. Any lightheartedness he felt disappeared the instant Butcher turned away from his fledgling, fixing John with a hard look. It was obvious that they could both smell Spencer on him, that they'd most likely been around to see Beckett put the boy on display.
"You should be careful," Butcher warned.
Siska stared at John with mild fascination and a little bit of disbelief, but he'd been taught well enough to hold his tongue.
"He was mine to begin with,"
John said, his tone harsher than he knew was warranted, for a warning from a friend. Butcher looked as though there was something he wanted to say to that, but John didn't give him the opportunity for it. Voicing his concerns in public was not a good idea.
"I just made sure he wouldn't stray,"
John continued, leaving it at that. He pushed past the two vampires and headed into the house.
"John Walker!"
Beckett's voice rang out from the parlor just off the entry hall. John turned left and made his way to the sitting room, leaning in the doorway and tucking his hat under his arm. Beckett was sitting in his usual chair, teacup in hand. But he wasn't alone. Darren was sitting in the wingback chair opposite him, one leg crossed over the other, what looked like a travel itinerary in his hand. Darren was quiet, conscientious, and though John hadn't had many dealings with him, he respected the other dandy for the steadiness of his calm demeanor.
"Yes?"
John asked, his voice flat as he shifted his gaze from Darren back to Beckett. The leader of the dandies was watching John with a small smile on his face, though it quickly grew strained as he caught the scent of something unexpected. John kept his gaze steady, refusing to look away or seem guilty. That would be key to getting out of this with a minimal amount of damage done.
"I've heard things, John Walker," Beckett said, his smile returning, though much less genuine this time.
John quirked an eyebrow, silently asking him to continue. "Things involving hunters and daring escapes, though it would seem that there are other, more interesting things my spies hadn't gotten around to mentioning." John fixed Beckett with a long look, taking in the slight tension in his shoulders, the carefully inquisitive look on his face, and a myriad of other small things that combined to ruin the look of calm and casualness he was trying to portray. He was annoyed at the very least, angry at the worst. There was little he could do about it. By Beckett's own logic, John hadn't done anything wrong. If there was no mark, there was no law to be broken.
"The hunters were easy enough to get rid of,"
John replied after a moment. "They were clumsy and overconfident, Pete needs to train them better if they hope to accomplish anything other than picking off the occasional stray punk. It was a lie. Pete's hunters were better trained than most, save the arrows. But there was no way John was going to admit it. As for the rest, Beckett prodded, leaning back in his chair and waiting expectantly. If he wanted John to lie or to excuse his behavior, he'd be waiting a very long time. Spencer decided to come home, John said simply. I was hardly going to turn that down twice. The admission that he'd done it once before was deliberate. There was no point in pretending he hadn't, not when Beckett had proof in the way of that damn bloody handkerchief. Ah, Beckett said carefully. How fortunate for him. Quite, John agreed. Well, I wondered when you'd get around to doing it, Beckett said after a moment. Honestly, John, leaving that poor thing to run around the city so confused, it was downright criminal of you. You can't blame me for wanting to give you a little nudge. John smiled at the revisionist history and wondered whether Beckett actually believed that version of events. The vampire mind wasn't all that different from the human one when it came to rationalization and rewriting unpleasant memories. It was even easier to do, given their long lives. They could get far enough away from the events that no one remembered how they'd actually happened. Of course not, John said, coming further into the room. No one can blame me for that. How thoughtful of you, really. I'm a very thoughtful man, Beckett agreed. Darren will be leaving us shortly. Did you know that, John? It was clear that their conversation was over, more than likely never to be brought up again. John didn't blame Beckett for that. There had to be more than a little sting in knowing John had put an end to his game so soon. No, I didn't know, John said, turning his attention back to Darren. He looked a little confused, as though he wasn't quite sure what he'd just witnessed. Maya's sending us someone, Beckett said, before Darren could reply. It seems her city has become a little too dangerous for her liking. Her fledgling has been targeted not only by the hunters, but also the hoods. She can't afford any weak links in her chain, though I'm sure that's not the only reason she's sending Felix to us. John agreed. He'd spent almost a year in Maya's city before being recalled to Beckett's side to deal with Gerard, and he knew how much she doted on her only fledgling. He was young, impetuous, but she adored him just the same. It was rare for sire-fledgling relationships to not have some kind of sexual edge, but theirs was one of the few. Felix had caught her eye for completely platonic reasons that John still didn't understand. Why go to that amount of trouble for someone you would only tuck into bed at the end of the night? A mean voice in his head told John that there was a good chance that was all he'd do with Spencer for quite some time, but he didn't let it bother him. It was all too easy to remember the hot slide of Spencer's mouth, the movements of his clever tongue. He'd fought it at first, but John was confident that Spencer would come to his senses sooner rather than later. Things must have gone downhill quickly after the butcher and I left, John said. Apparently, Beckett said. Felix will be arriving later tonight, but Darren will be leaving in less than an hour. Hopefully he'll be able to help. The last thing anyone wants is for the Hoods to gain a foothold in her city. It would set a dangerous precedent. It was true. Word would spread quickly, and vampires in other cities would start to get ideas. A dandy losing power was bad for them all.
What John didn't understand was why Beckett would trade Darren, of all people. He was strong enough for his age, but he lacked the experience necessary to be truly useful given the situation. Hadn't Maya asked for more substantial help? She was a shrewd leader, skilled and strong, and she understood the need to put vanity aside and ask for help if it was best for her city. So why wasn't she getting the help she must have asked for? Was it due to more hurt feelings? Their trades were usually fair. A fledgling for a fledgling, an old one for an old one. When John and the butcher had been sent, Beckett had received 2 envoys of equal rank and ability. Had Beckett simply been irritated to be asked to give someone a power in exchange for a fledgling who had barely begun to show his talents? It seemed more malevolent than John wanted to believe. Still, he knew better than to question it. "What time is Felix due to arrive?" John asked instead. "Within the hour," Beckett replied. "The butcher and Cardin will go with the young ones. They've never been to greet an envoy before. This is a perfect opportunity." Anyone else would consider it an insult for a collection of fledglings to meet them, but Felix wouldn't know any better. Even if he did, the butcher and Mike's presence might soothe any hurt feelings. "I can go with them," John offered. "No, that's all right," Beckett said. "I have something else you can do." John was hardly surprised to find himself running errands, visiting with local police, and paying off politicians. He was even a little glad of it. Meeting envoys was a boring, stuffy affair. Dandies did so love their traditions. The airport was the butcher's least favorite place to be. He hated the smells, the sounds, the fact that not even they could get their flights to run on time. He checked his pocket watch once more and sighed. 20 minutes late. There were better things he could be doing with his time than standing on the tarmac, waiting for a fledgling of all people. He tried not to let it bother him. Their fledglings could hardly be trusted to meet the envoy on their own, and there was no way he was comfortable letting Siska out of his sight. In that regard, his presence was necessary. Hardly an insult at all. Cardin, on the other hand, had no such excuses to fall back on. There was no reason for him to be there at all, and his impatience was written all over his face. Butcher was surprised that Beckett would do that to him. He thought for sure that Brendan would end up having to babysit Nate and Michael, not to mention Felix. Siska stood to the butcher's left, his body thrumming with barely contained energy. He was excited, but also determined to keep himself in check. He was a good fledgling. He'd taken to dandy life extremely well, even though he'd had little choice in the matter. While the butcher didn't quite understand those with the need to get permission before turning someone, even he'd thought things had moved a little fast with Siska. He'd only watched the kid for 3 days before deciding to keep him. And in those 3 days, he'd only had 1 conversation with him. It was nothing like the way Maya had chosen Felix. It much closer resembled the way Beckett had chosen Pete. But things had turned out remarkably better than that, so Butcher put it out of his mind. Though, that wasn't to say he hadn't worried for a few days. Siska caught him staring, and smiled a little, ducking his head to hide the expression. Butcher ran a hand down the length of his boy's back, slow and easy, just because he could. "Stop it," Cardin snapped. Butcher looked over to see him glaring, pocket watch in hand. Butcher made a point of petting Siska again, before glancing over and giving the mesmerist a dirty look. Cardan would do well to respect his elders, even if there was only a 40-year difference between them. He was tempted to say something cutting, maybe point out how Cardan's inability to keep his own boy was his fault and no one else's, but there was a time and a place for everything. Airing dirty laundry in public would accomplish nothing.
Finally,
he heard Cardan mutter. Butcher turned his attention to the sky and saw the plane approaching.
Finally was right, Butcher thought.
He'd never say it out loud. There was no point in agreeing with Cardan when he was in a mood. It would only encourage him. Butcher watched as several humans hurried around the landing strip, all dressed in identical dark blue coveralls. Two carried clipboards and were looking over a checklist, talking softly about pre-flight inspections. Two others had a trolley with them, ready to see to any baggage the passenger might have. There was a fuel truck approaching, hanging back until the plane had safely landed. Apparently, the pilots wouldn't be made to wait a fraction of the time the dandies had. The thought made Butcher even more irritated than he already was. It wasn't long until the plane, a small Cessna twin engine, touched down on the tarmac, rolling to a stop not far from where the vampire stood. The Butcher was about to take a step forward when Nate's hand shot out, tightly gripping the elder vampire's wrist. Butcher looked at him, intent on asking him to kindly remove his hand if he wanted to keep it, when he caught sight of the look on the fledgling's face.
"What's wrong?"
he asked.
"Why are they nervous?"
Nate asked, inclining his head toward the humans, who were busily moving toward the plane.
"This is routine. Why are they scared? I can see it, shades of purple mixed with black. I think that means they're afraid."
Butcher was moving, Cardan right behind him, before Nate even finished speaking. His talent was new, hardly focused enough to be reliable all the time, but he couldn't see something that wasn't there. If the humans were agitated, there was a reason for it. The fact that they were moving toward Maya's envoy was telling. The door to the plane swung open, the stairs folding out, and the humans burst into action. Three of them rushed the stairs, taking them two at a time and knocking Felix back. They were very well trained, knew where to hit to render him off balance, how to subdue him. Butcher raced for the stairs, easily dodging the stake in the hand of the lone hunter who'd stayed on the tarmac. He shoved her aside, putting most of his phenomenal strength into it, directing her toward Cardan, who was only a few steps behind him. Though he didn't stop to look, Butcher knew that the younger vampire had no trouble grabbing her, knocking her to the ground and making sure that she stayed where he put her. As he bounded up the stairs, he heard the fuel truck screeching to a halt and footsteps pound across the tarmac. There was a familiar voice screaming over the chaos, and Butcher did chance a look over his shoulder then, needing to see with his own eyes just who it was. Pete stood in the middle of the fray, stake in hand as he watched his companions, one in a cast, another with bandages up to his elbow, circle around the three young dandies the Butcher and Cardan had left behind.
"Go back!"
he yelled at Cardan. The mesmerist faltered, and even though it was only for a moment, it was enough that the hunters were able to get the advantage. Nate went down hard with a vial of holy water to the face, screaming and writhing on the tarmac. Whether it was accidental or calculating, his flailing arm caught hold of the fair-haired hunter's ankle, jerking him off his feet. There was the sound of breaking glass as the rest of the vial shattered as he hit the ground. Butcher turned away from the scene then, his attention focused on the envoy and the three hunters who'd cornered him inside the plane. The smell of blood, human and vampire, was strong, even from the doorway. There was a gurgling sound from the back of the plane, and Butcher hurried up the aisle, searching each row to make sure none of the hunters were lying in wait. He found one human dead of a broken neck in the third row and kept going, making his way toward a pair of shiny wingtips he could just see sticking out into the aisle up ahead. One of the hunters jumped up from where she was huddled in the fifth row, stake in hand, but she was easily put down. Butcher's fingers circled around her neck, gripping hard enough that he could lift her off her feet. Her body went flying toward the door, and he didn't bother to look back when he heard her hit the wall. He ran the rest of the way to the back row. "Motherfucker!" Butcher cursed when he got there. Felix was lying in a pool of his own blood, a small wooden stake lodged firmly in his chest. His skin was ashen, his breathing labored and eyelids drooping. He wouldn't last much longer. The last hunter was lying on his side next to the vampire, not much left of his throat. He'd been the one gurgling earlier. "Felix?" Butcher asked. His only reply was a low moan and the flutter of the fledgling eyelashes before one last, unnecessary breath rattled in his chest and he died. "God damn it," he said softly. "This would have consequences. Dire ones." The sound of tires squealing on the tarmac outside caused Butcher to jump to his feet, running for the door of the plane. He jumped over the fallen hunter in the aisle and all but slid down the stairs. The fuel truck rushed past, causing him to stumble backward to avoid being run over. As it sped away, Butcher saw Pete and his people inside, grim looks on all their faces. They hadn't even waited long enough to find out if their plan was successful, and no one tried to collect the hunter Carden had mesmered. She was still lying on the ground, unmoving, but alive. "Butcher," Carden called. Butcher looked away from the woman, turning his attention to the spot where the other vampire was kneeling. The scent of blood was strong in the air, and while some of it was unfamiliar, a mix of Nate and Michael, most likely. There was an unmistakable undertone that Butcher would know anywhere. He took careful, measured steps toward the group of dandies clustered on the ground, eyes flicking toward the shiny shoes he'd watched Siska put on earlier that evening. Nate was sitting next to Carden, leaning heavily against Michael's side, even though it must have been painful given the tearing of Michael's clothes and the purpling skin Butcher could see from even that far away. Michael was speaking quietly, stupid nonsense words that would have been stripped from his vocabulary had his sire lived long enough to raise him properly. He and Nate both had a long way to go, but they'd get there eventually. There was a gurgling noise and a sharp, pained breath. Butcher's hands clenched into fists, and he ran the last few yards, all but shoving the fledglings out of his way in his hurry. Siska was on the ground, a roughly hewn stake sticking out of his chest. "Adam?" He rarely used the boy's given name, and even then it was in private. Siska's eyes fluttered open, and he tried to smile. "Fucking Wentz," he said softly. "He missed the heart," Carden said, before Butcher could reply. "Siska's lost a lot of blood, but he'll be fine in a few days, so long as we do this now." He looked from the stake back up to Butcher's face and waited. The butcher nodded and watched as Carden pulled back the sleeves of his jacket and ruined white dress shirt. Butcher did the same, raising his wrist to his mouth when he grabbed the stake with his other hand. He bit down as he wrenched the stake free, doing his best to ignore Siska's howl of pain. Butcher pressed his bleeding wrist to Siska's mouth, muffling his whimpers, while Carden let his drip over the gaping hole in the fledgling's chest. "Is Felix dead?" Carden asked. Butcher nodded. "Fucking Wentz," he growled. "Fucking Wentz," Butcher agreed. Brendan wandered the city for the rest of the night, stopping to feed when the mood struck him, but mostly just walking the darkened streets. He made a point of passing by Pete's warehouse, wanting to harass him or his people a little, but but was disappointed when no one came out to play. He peeked in a few of the dirty, dust-streaked windows, but was unable to make out much beyond the shadowy outlines of people inside. Something was wrong. Brendan could smell faint traces of blood when he passed the main door. No one seemed to be seriously injured, but they'd had a hard night. That much was obvious by the way they were pacing. Brendan wondered if the punks were causing trouble again, or if maybe the hoods had taken an interest in Pete. Either were likely scenarios, but Brendan didn't really believe them. When it came to Pete Wentz and his hunters, only one gang could get them so riled up. He frowned and made his way back to the sidewalk, a little annoyed that he'd left the Mercedes all the way across town. Stealing another car wouldn't be a problem, but he'd rather liked the candy red finish. After that, the silver Volvo was almost pathetic. He shook his head and tried not to pout. He made the drive to the dandy safe house in no time, his foot heavy on the gas and all but forgetting how to use the brake. He passed several police cars, none of which bothered to give chase, and he smiled at the other motorists as he cut them off. He was going to leave the Volvo outside the gate like they usually did with their stolen cars, but the gate surrounding the dandy house was standing open, and a black sedan was badly parked in the middle of the laneway. All four doors were open, as was the trunk, and the smell of vampire blood was so strong, even from that far away, that Brendan almost choked on it. He'd never found vampire blood all that attractive, though he knew some who loved the taste. It wasn't particularly nutritious. They couldn't live off it for very long. But it was a kink, just like any other. Brendan had a few of his own, and therefore had no room to judge. This was well beyond a little rough play, though, and Brendan couldn't help but think of the tension at Pete's and the blood he'd smelled in the doorway. Something had happened, and Brendan's instincts were right. He ran the rest of the way to the house, throwing the door open and following the bloody smudges on the carpet. They led him upstairs to the butcher's suite, where the majority of the dandy population was standing in the hallway. Brendan pushed the younger ones aside and skillfully maneuvered his way around his elders, managing to fit through a small space between someone's body and the doorframe. The hardwood was slick with blood, the elegant Tabriz Kirkwall rug ruined by bloody, discarded clothes, and the large pool of blood spreading out from where Siska lay. The wound in his chest was still gaping, but Brendan didn't think much of the blood was his own by that point. Carden knelt near him, one wrist torn and bloody, while Butcher sat near Siska's head, his own wrist still held to his boy's mouth. Beckett stood not far away, staring down at the fledgling and his sire, a closed expression on his face. No one was paying any attention to the less seriously injured Nate and Michael, or to the terrified human tied up in the corner.
"He's going to need more than you can give him," Brendan said.
All eyes quickly settled on him, and Brendan had a split second to wonder if maybe he wasn't wanted, even though he could offer help. Gerard might have been gone for nearly a month, but he'd left a hell of a parting gift. Suspicion and anger, all directed at Brendan.
"He's right," Beckett said after a moment. "You both look like shit. You've given him too much already."
"What happened?" Brendan asked, kneeling next to Siska, ignoring the sticky, coagulating blood that clung to his trousers. He quickly bit into his wrist and pressed it to the fledgling's mouth. It took a moment for him to latch on, the blood no doubt tasting different, wrong, but the hunger won out. Brendan watched as the wound in Siska's chest slowly knit itself together a little more. He wasn't all that old, but his blood was still reasonably strong.
"Maya's envoy is dead," Butcher spat. "Thanks to Pete."
"Are we sure he masterminded it?" Brendan asked carefully. It was a stupid question, but it never paid to bring Pete up unless they had all the facts.
Ask the lady in the corner, Carden suggested,
inclining his head toward the human. She was sitting perfectly still, no doubt instructed too by Carden, whose mesmerism was nothing if not exceptional. But her eyes were flicking from vampire to vampire, wide and scared.
Well?
Brendan demanded.
Tell me what happened, was the message he sent her.
Whence came to us, the woman said, her eyes widening even more when she couldn't stop herself from speaking.
He promised us easy pickings. A fledgling, he said. It would be an insult to send anything else to meet him.
Brendan noticed the butcher glance over at Carden, but he very carefully kept his eyes trained on the hunter.
We didn't want to. We've heard stories about Wentz and his people, but Chris just couldn't resist. If we pulled it off, everyone would be talking about it. About us, she continued.
Oh, they'll be talking about you,
Beckett said.
The idiots who got caught.
The envoy's dead, the hunter said. If she'd had control of her muscles, she'd no doubt have been preening.
So are the rest of your people, the butcher hissed.
And so are you, Beckett said. He nodded at Nate and Michael, who wasted no time in darting forward, one in front of, the other behind, the bound human.
Scream if you want to, Carden said offhandedly.
Brendan thought it was a little cruel, but then again, Sisko was bleeding all over the carpet. Brendan watched as Nate and Michael fed, listened as the hunter first tried begging, then finally grew quiet, groaning softly before she died. The fledglings dropped the body to the floor when they were done, and Brendan could see the ruined skin of Nate's face slowly beginning to knit itself back together.
I'll send someone to find a meal for both of you, Beckett said to Butcher and Carden.
The mesmerist nodded, but Butcher looked furious.
I don't want a meal, he said. I want Wentz's head on a plate, Beckett.
Well, unfortunately, that's not likely to happen, Beckett said, his tone clearly conveying that they'd already had that particular conversation. Brendan wished he'd arrived sooner.
I will take care of it, Butcher. That's all you need to know.
Now, I'm going to be generous and find you something to eat, even though you don't seem that interested in it. With that, he left the room, not bothering to spare a backward glance for the angry vampire behind him.
You might as well go,
the butcher said to Carden. The mesmerist slowly got to his feet, no doubt a little light-headed after giving so much blood to Sisko.
Thank you.
Carden just nodded curtly and pushed past the gawkers in the doorway, a little rougher than necessary.
Get some sleep, Brendan murmured to Nate and Michael, who were all but asleep in the corner, leaning against each other.
They nodded sleepily at him, helping one another to their feet, swaying back and forth for a moment. Brendan watched them go before gently pulling his wrist away from Siska's mouth.
He'll live,
Brendan said, tracing one of Siska's eyebrows before he realized what he was doing. It wasn't smart to get so intimate with someone else's fledgling. Not even if the fledgling in question currently had an incredible amount of Brendan's blood in his system.
Yes, he will, Butcher said. Help me get him to the bedroom.
Brendan grabbed Siskel's ankles while Butcher got his shoulders, and together they slowly moved the injured vampire to the bedroom, careful not to jostle him too much. Even though they took their time, Siska still groaned and whimpered with every step. They set him in the middle of the king-sized bed, throwing the bed covers to the floor.
"Who was sent to Maya?" Brendan asked, leaning against one of the bedposts.
"Darren," Butcher said. He began to strip off his clothes, leaving them on the floor, much as he'd done with Siska's. There wasn't enough time to take Felix's plane back, so we left almost 2 hours before Felix got in.
"Darren? That's hardly a fair trade," Brendan pointed out.
He crossed his arms and watched Butcher with curious eyes.
"No, it isn't," Butcher snorted. "Darren was Beckett's idea of doing Maya a favor."
"Some favor," Brendan remarked. He liked Darren, but he wasn't a fighter. He had no experience with putting down minor rebellions, and as such wouldn't be much help in defending Maya's city.
"He should have sent me back," Butcher said.
He slipped a bathrobe over his shoulders and cinched it tight around his waist.
"Or John, though I suppose he's not likely to go anywhere near Maya at this point. You don't put a human in the middle of a war zone, and you don't leave him behind when you go, either."
"That's not the only reason," Brendan said, pushing away from the bed and coming closer to the chest of drawers, in front of which Butcher stood. "He loves this city. He hates leaving it."
"Yes, well, this city is falling apart," Butcher said, his eyes seeking out Siska's still form.
He watched for a moment before turning an angry look towards Brendan.
"It's partly his fault, you know. Nicholas asked John to be his successor, to run the city in the same way he did, but John had to fucking turn him down. I don't even know what he told Nicholas, because he never was one to take no for an answer. He was angry for days afterward, but he never took it out on John. He seemed to understand in the end."
"Who suggested Beckett for the position?" Brendan asked. People so rarely discussed the time before Beckett had come into power, and they did it even less when Brendan was present. That Butcher might actually answer him left Brendan feeling a little giddy.
"Beckett did," Butcher laughed, though there wasn't any amusement in the sound. "He mounted a one-man campaign. I half expected buttons and signs. In the end, it was John's endorsement that did it."
"Really?" Brendan said, surprised to hear that.
"Yes."
Butcher rolled his shoulders and made his way toward the bed, settling next to Siska.
"Everything was fine until Beckett's want-take-have philosophy backfired. Spectacularly."
"He is certainly holding on tightly," Brendan said carefully.
"He should have cut his losses long ago," Butcher said angrily. "We're all paying because he didn't. What do you think will happen when Maya finds out about this?" he demanded. "Brian has already cut us off because of what Wentz did to his fledgling. Gabriel has been searching for a reason, if only out of loyalty to Brian. And Maya has close ties with both of them. When it gets out that Felix is dead after he was sent here to be safeguarded, they're both going to use their influence to have her sever all ties with us, just like Brian did."
That would be disastrous, Brendan knew. It didn't take long for word to travel. If the other gangs knew the dandies had no reinforcements, they'd be falling over themselves to cause trouble. They'd be able to put down the uprisings for a time, but eventually they'd be overwhelmed.
"There has to be a way to fix this," Brendan said, purposely trailing away, encouraging the Butcher to offer a suggestion.
Brendan knew full well what would fix the situation, but there was no way he could put forth the option, not when he was already regarded as a traitor for what he'd done with Frank. Butcher, however, was safe from reproach. He could suggest things Brendan could only think of.
"The only way to fix this," Butcher said,
is to get rid of Beckett. Half the dandies here have lost faith in him. He can't even control his own fledgling.
Butcher's eyes wandered over Siska's chest again.
He endangers us all. And for what? Lust? Stubborn pride? Wentz should have been put down as soon as he began causing problems.
So there's others who would agree with this plan? Brendan asked slowly.
You know there is, Butcher said. You'd wave the fucking banner.
This isn't about me, Brendan said. It's about all of us. There's no point in doing this if there aren't enough people to stand together.
I'll get the others, no problem there, Butcher replied. The hard part will be finding someone to take over. It can't be someone divisive, they have to be strong, and they need to understand that the good of the city comes first. They need to be a rallying point for the rest of us.
I know someone, Brendan said. He has a great deal of experience in putting the needs of others ahead of his own petty wants. After all, he disowned his boy because it was in his best interest. Butcher looked up sharply at that.
John didn't want the job the first time it was offered to him. What makes you think he'd take it now?
A lot has changed, Brendan said. Like you said, this city is falling apart. John's not about to sit by and watch it happen.
Butcher was quiet for several long minutes. Brendan was exhausted. Sun must have been high in the sky by then, but he forced himself to stay awake. If Butcher could do it, having given much more blood, then so could Brendan.
He's probably asleep by now, Butcher said.
He's not likely to be here, even if he is, Brendan replied. You'll have to see him tomorrow. Go to his safe house right after nightfall. Bring as many people as you can. It'll convince him.
Great plan, except for how I have no idea where his safe house is, Butcher said.
Brendan just smiled.
I can help you with that, he promised.